Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening. Happy January 2025 to everybody. It's almost February at this point.
It is.
But I'm still reminding myself.
That it's 2025.
It is. Yep. I am. This one didn't feel as hard to switch over.
I usually don't. I usually maybe once write the previous year.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I remember it from there moving forward.
I know. Well, I don't know. This year just seemed...
And it's a nice round, 2025.
It is, right.
So 2025.
Ready for it, yeah.
I saw something, I didn't bring it with me, but the different years of movies, sci-fi movies, that things happen in the future.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a list of a couple of things that happened in a movie in 2025, like it's the year Terminator came or something like that. I don't know.
Well, the funny thing is the
Terminator was made.
The 1990s, right, or the 1900s. Like, that's when a lot of things were predicted to happen. So we're so far beyond that.
2001 A Space Odyssey.
I know. Yep. And my children too. They do use that term 1900s. You were born in the 1900s. It's like, oh my dear.
Your kids crack me up.
Really?
And do they say it like derogatory?
Well, like that it's just so long ago. I mean, it's like exasperated.
I saw something in one of the articles about Jimmy Carter that he's 17 presidents old, or he was 17 president. And I kind of love that. I started trying to figure out, like, okay, how many am I?
Yeah.
Instead of giving an age, I'm going to start giving out my presidential terms.
And then he had, like, the most presidents ever, right? So at a wake. Or the most living presidents ever attended his funeral.
I'd have to think about, like, because you always have to think of the early days, too.
Right. I mean, right. But, I mean, nobody's going to live that long.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. So that's good.
We're getting right to it.
Let's get right to it. I have a word. This one's a noun and it's shiviness.
Shiviness.
Yes.
And it's a noun.
It is.
It's when you're nervous about a upcoming voyage on a ship.
Ooh, see, but it's shiv, like a shiv.
Yeah. You're nervous about getting stabbed in prison.
That's where I thought you were going to go. But no, it's even better than that. It's the unpleasant or itchy feeling that comes from wearing new underwear. Shiviness. Yep. He went into the interview confident, but soon felt the shiviness of his new briefs and the sweat under his collar.
See, right there, why would you wear something brand new you've never worn before to an interview?
Exactly. Well, it was a man.
That's bad choices.
It's choices.
All right. So these are the history highlights, things that happen tomorrow, January 20th, Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yes.
All right. 1778, the first American military court-martial trial begins in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So I had to do a deeper dive on that one.
Right.
Colonel David Henley served in several capacities in the Army during and after the American Revolution. It was during his tenure as prisoner of war commandant in Cambridge that the court-martial occurred. The British prisoners from the Battle of Saratoga, which was an important one, came under his jurisdiction. One of the prisoners proved insolent and uncooperative. Henley stabbed the prisoner, an offense for which he was court-martialed.
Oh.
The trial lasted from January 20th, 1778, to February 25th, 1778, and he was acquitted of all charges. He went on to serve as an intelligence officer for General George Washington. Washington later appointed him as an agent of the Department of War in 1793, and while serving as a clerk in the War Department, he died on January 1st, 1823.
Interesting.
I kind of want to know even more.
Right.
Like, how insolent was this guy that she stabbed him?
And then you went
with a sword?
You went on to have all of these, this really good career positions too, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So he's a colonel. Interesting. 1785, Samuel Ellis advertises to sell Oyster Island. No takers. Oh. Ellis Island.
Interesting.
Ellis Island in New York. Oh. Nobody wants it.
Oh, wow.
All right. 1920, the American Civil Liberties Union was founded.
Oh, interesting. Okay. 1920.
I thought about making that one the history highlight of the day.
That's a big one.
1981, the Iran hostage crisis ends. 2008, Breaking Bad premieres, even though it's not an Oregon thing.
Yes.
Did you ever watch it?
No.
Okay. It's very violent.
Yes.
You would not like
it. Not my style.
All right. This one almost was going to be my history highlight of the day.
You're creeping up, though, on it not being
2020.
History.
2020.
Yeah. Okay.
And argue with me here.
Yeah. No, I say 25 years, so.
2020.
Yep.
Was going to be my history highlight of the day. 2020.
Made my list. I know what it is.
The first confirmed case of COVID found in U.S. See, I think COVID is going to have kind of it's going to stay in history.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be something we're like, oh, yeah, that was something. Instead of sometimes these things happen, we're like, we're going to forget about this in 2 years. 2021. Kamala Harris becomes the first female vice president.
Yep.
But my history highlight of the day, the thing I had to go with. Even, okay. You know, and I had those other things I thought about, but then I saw this one. 1942, Nazi officials hold the notorious Wannsee Conference in Berlin to organize the final solution. The extermination of Europe's Jews, the Holocaust, that's where they kind of made the decision and planned it out. So obviously a huge impact on history. So they're not always fun things, but the history highlight of the day, 1942, those darn Nazis.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, so you missed one, but just to go back on the things that's not quite history yet, but will be, you know, Kamala Harris, obviously that's so huge, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, to be the first woman and then the first Black woman, it just is so important.
Yep.
To democracy and to my kids that mm-hmm. are young girls. But then I wonder what date we're going to remember. Is it going to be that first confirmed case, or is it going to go back?
It'll be a time period.
Outbreak. It'll just be, yeah. And the time period, though, lasts too. So what do you say? It's all of 2020, 2020 and 2021.
I think history will look at it as like a 2 year thing.
Okay. The pandemic. I mean, yes. A pandemic lasts.
Yep.
That okay interesting.
Because but like we don't really, even though we've actually read the date and the guy name of the guy for the Spanish American flu,
okay,
the Spanish flu,
right.
That we said it was this guy and this date, but we as historians don't really think of it as a specific date. We just think of it like, oh, 1918.
It's right, because it had such a it's such a global, I mean, that's why it was called a pandemic. So,
yeah.
Okay, interesting. So the one other thing, too, was January 20th, 1980, a letter to the United States Olympic Committee and a TV interview. U.S. President Jimmy Carter proposes that the 1980 Summer Olympics be moved from the planned host city, Moscow, if the Soviet Union failed to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan within a month, which they did not, of course. And it did lead to the United States was one of about 60 countries that eventually boycotted those Moscow Olympics. Had a big impact. I mean, really a big impact on athletics, because it's a long time for that turnaround.
Well, and then they boycotted, Soviet Union boycotted 1984.
Correct. Right. So, I mean, just things were not good. I mean, there was it just didn't feel good. So it was also influential.
All right.
Moving on.
So had the Nazis not had to put themselves into this day,
exactly.
Would you have accepted 2020 with the COVID?
Well, not yet, because again, I mean, because
you've got your 25-year policy.
I feel good because I'm sitting with a historian, but my high school history teacher wouldn't let us discuss history prior to 25 years. So he ingrained that.
Is he local?
He's not. He's in Portland. I went to Reynolds High School in Troutdale.
Because I was about to say, that fool.
I know.
But if he's local, he might be hearing. I don't want to call him a fool.
Mr. Beeman. We can call him. I mean, Mr. Beeman, and then I can tag him and send him this.
We should have him on the air.
This is my takeaway. That and critical thinking skills. Mm-hmm. So now I'm really just going on a tangent, which you'd love.
I think
he taught critical thinking skills on the first day in class for U.S. history. Every year. So if you had him multiple years, you had to take critical thinking skills 4 years in a row, which I had
for
him.
Just one day, though. And that
was
done. And then you had your critical thinking.
Right. But he brought them up all year long. And if you ever missed like one of the things that was necessary in critical thinking, I mean, he just shamed you to pieces. So again, another takeaway from
I think it's
U.S. history.
Tough to make a judgment. But there are some things that are just so clearly going to have an impact on history long term. And you know, I think rarely would we say, oh, that's really significant, and then it turns out to be nothing.
Right. I mean, it's semantics too, right? Yes. It's not history yet, but it's historical. Mm. It's going to be history.
But I will say, if you're a politician or if you're a newscast, podcast kind of person at all, then I do take your proclamation with a grain of salt. Right. This is the most important thing ever. You know, it's like my 6-year-old son at the time. How was your day when he was having a bad day? This is the worst day ever. Don't think it's going to be your worst day ever.
Right. It's going to get worse, buddy.
The rest of your life, you might have a day that's worse than you didn't get to watch TV.
Not the thing to say to a crying little child, though.
Oh, I always did. We would mock the worst day ever. In fact, that's one of my, I still say that phrase when somebody like at the bank or something says, how was your weekend? I go, worst weekend ever.
See, they're like, oh man.
All right.
Moving on.
So something that was a bad day.
It was, yes. Or what?
Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes.
So we had a show where we actually talked about some unknown or little known facts about Martin Luther King Jr.
I remember.
And I didn't want to just redo that. So I found something else.
Okay.
And this largely comes from somebody named Amanda Sedlak-Hevener, but things that happened immediately after Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. And we know some of them, but there's some that you may not know.
Immediately after.
Yep. 50 years later, society is still feeling the effects of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s death. Dr. King was assassinated on April 4th, 1968. He was on the balcony of his Memphis, Tennessee hotel room when James Earl Ray fatally shot him in the face. Dr. King fell unconscious immediately, his vertebrae and cheekbones violently shattered, and was rushed to a hospital where he died an hour later at the age of 39. That always amazes me.
I know.
39.
Oh, man. Yeah.
All right. The murder of Dr. King sent the nation into a frenzy. Riots broke out in over 100 different cities as the American people tried to cope with the loss of such an influential figure. What happened immediately following the Martin Luther King Jr. assassination would be a mix of praise and criticism, dividing the nation and triggering debates about the fight for equality. Of course, one thing is certain, Dr. King is remembered for not only his pivotal role in the civil rights movement, but also for his powerful words that stood, on the cusp of change.
Yeah. He was pronounced dead at St. Joseph's Hospital. Immediately after being shot on the balcony, Dr. King's friend, Reverend Ralph Abernathy, rushed out from their hotel room to find him. Dr. King was rushed to St. Joseph's Hospital, but he never woke again. He was pronounced dead at 7:05 p.m. The bullet that went through his cheek and stopped at his shoulder, shattering his jawbones and some of his vertebrae in the process. It also cut through major arteries, hitting with such force that even his tie was torn off.
Yikes. James Earl Jones, or James Earl Jones. I'm so used to saying James Earl Jones. How often do you say James Earl Ray?
Not often. Yes.
James Earl Ray, Darth Vader had nothing to do with this. So James Earl Ray fled the country, but was caught 2 months later. Prior to killing Dr. King, James Earl Ray had been serving a 20-year prison sentence. However, he escaped from prison and assassinated King, triggering a vicious manhunt that spanned over 2 months and 5 countries. Now, I would not have gotten this right in Jeopardy. I did not remember that he was actually escaped from prison.
It makes I'm scratching my head over all this.
Yeah. Authorities finally caught up with him in London and on July 19th, 1968, extradited him to the United States. Ray pled guilty and was sentenced to 99 years in prison. He spent the majority of his time in jail trying to reverse the decision, mad at himself for pleading guilty. I didn't do it.
Because not guilty would have gotten very far.
Yeah.
Walter Cronkite reported the tragedy. He was the lead anchor of the CBS Evening News. He was almost done with his nightly newscast when word of Martin Luther King's death made it into the studio. Cronkite reported the news and included a statement from then President Lyndon B. Johnson informing the nation to reject the violence of the assassination and embrace the nonviolent message preached by King. Cronkite also included some quotes from shocked residents of Harlem, New York, who reportedly poured out into the streets dazed upon hearing the news.
Where has Walter Cronkite gone?
I know. Well, and I think that's really the vivid memory for so many people that were alive then, right? Like they recall his voice and the words that he said, and that, you know, those of us that have heard about it then, you know, remember the hotel that he was staying, like those pictures, like those sort of monumental times. But Walter Cronkite was forever attached.
Coretta Scott King immediately continued to spread her late husband's nonviolent message. 4 days after the death of her husband, Coretta Scott King was a pillar of strength after catching a plane to Memphis, arranged by Robert F. Kennedy, who gave a speech the night of April 4th in Martin Luther King Jr.'s memory. She led a march through the streets of Memphis on behalf of the city's black sanitation workers. And I think that's why he was there. The march was eerily silent, despite the estimated 40,000 people who joined
in. Riots did break out. This did happen. Despite Martin Luther King Jr.'s insistence on nonviolence, the news of the assassination triggered riots in areas in many major cities. Tensions between the African-American communities and city leaders had been brewing for years, and King's death was the powder keg that made them explode. Some cities, such as Baltimore and Chicago, had to call in the National Guard as well as the Marines in order to restore order. Notably, people in Cleveland, Ohio, who had an African-American mayor at the time, did not riot at all.
That's interesting. And I wonder what he said. I wonder what he did.
Yeah.
That made people calm down and
right.
not have violence.
In summation, 39 people died and more than $65 million in damages were incurred. Historians believe that the riots are what fueled the new rising Republican right, which ushered in Nixon's presidency later that year.
Yeah, law and order.
Ugh, that's tough.
Yep. A national day of mourning was held on April 7th, 1968. On April 5th, one day after King's death, President Lyndon B. Johnson declared that April 7th of that year would be a national day of mourning for the fallen civil rights leader. Flags were to be flown at half-staff on all government buildings. However, by that day, many cities were dealing with riots, which disrupted the peaceful message that Johnson was trying to convey. That's a tough one, because you want to do it immediately, but at the same time, if riots and other things are going to be taking people's minds, then they miss the chance to do it if you do it too soon.
Right.
So I don't know what the right answer is
there. Hard to make decisions in those times, right? And reactions to King's death were mixed. The death of Martin Luther King Jr. had sent the African-American community into a state of anger and mourning. However, the reactions of whites throughout the country were mixed. Some grieved the civil rights leader as they supported his cause and message of nonviolence. However, in the South, some political leaders and their constituents were remaining critical of Dr. King. One such leader was then governor of Georgia, Lester Maddox, who threatened to raise the American flag in front of his state house back to the top instead of keeping it at half mast. You know, I'm going to go back to what I read just a couple seconds ago. It said that there was $65 million in damages, and on this report, it says historians believe the riots are what fueled the new rising Republican right. And I guess I would beg to disagree on that. I mean, we were in a state of angst during this time, right? Mm-hmm. And Dr. King was the voice of calm, but he was raising some hugely important issues, right?
Giant issues, yeah.
Issues of segregation, issues of violence, issues.
Equality, equity.
Exactly. So
education.
When we're talking about damages were already occurring. And this right wing, you know, this it says the new rising Republican right. Mm-hmm. Came after this. No, it already existed. It had existed for centuries prior to this. And this was just continued fuel to the fire. It certainly, his death and those riots did not cause those people to become racist.
Yes, yes.
So as soon as I said that, I was like, whoa.
That's well said, because it's not through time. It changes. The face of it changes.
Yes.
And the way that it happens changes. So, yeah.
And we can all have emotional reactions to how something makes us feel, right? Property damage always makes people feel very upset.
Yes.
On all sides, right? So I do think that that is certainly a trigger, but it doesn't create the hate.
Yep. Absolutely correct. After several days of memorials, King was buried in Southview Cemetery. King was buried on April 9th, 1968, after several days of public memorials. The funeral was held at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, following a procession of around 100,000 people through the streets of the city. One of King's friends, Mahalia Jackson, performed a song at the ceremony, which was broadcast live on television. King was buried at Southview Cemetery, but his body now rests at the King Center, a National Historic Site.
Okay. Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1968. This is also known as the Fair Housing Act. It made its way through Congress quickly after Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. The bill prohibited the act of redlining, a method used by banks to refuse to give loans for houses in certain areas to qualified African Americans. President Lyndon B. Johnson signed it into law on April 11th, 1968.
That's pretty fast.
There is a great exhibit at the Heritage Museum that you can go to right now to see how this redlining occurred in Astoria.
And not just redlining, wink, wink, nod, nod.
Right. I mean,
it was in deeds.
Documented.
In actual deeds. Not like, hey, indeed, this is true.
Correct. Documented in a deed.
This house cannot be sold to a person of color, flat out.
Yeah.
As recently as the 1960s.
It's one of my favorite exhibits here because it's, and I remember when you were putting it up and you said, there's so many words. And maybe even it was Chelsea Vaughn, Dr. Vaughn, who said, you know, that's a hard exhibit to do when you have words, not pictures, not everything. But there is a map. And then the map along with those words are very powerful because you're like, wow, this is my community. This is
documented spots in Astoria.
Yes.
That we know 100%. So
yes.
It's a tough exhibit.
It is.
But it's powerful. And it's not... We're not saying your grandfather was evil or horrible because they lived here in 1900.
Right. But when we hear the comments, and we've both heard them, Astoria is predominantly white because of our Scandinavian heritage. That is not necessarily true. There were laws and, occurring in place that prevented.
All of Oregon. It was deliberate.
Yes. Prevented people of color from owning homes and just living in our community.
Opportunity. So this is something I don't recall if I ever knew this or if I've just forgotten about it, but the Southern Christian Leadership Conference followed through with Resurrection City on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Prior to King's death, he was working with his organization, the SCLC, to create a Resurrection City on the National Mall in order to draw attention to the nation's poor. The SCLC went on to hold the mass protest in spite of their leader's death on May 12th. Under the leadership of the new president, Reverend Ralph Abernathy, Resurrection City was set up. 3,000 tents were placed on the National Mall with permission from the National Park Service. The tents and the protesters inhabiting them stayed in place until June when they were tear gassed out by police.
Wow.
So I don't know anything about that. I got to do some more research.
Oh, that is interesting. Okay.
Were they tear gassed because they just didn't leave or were there's... Were
permit there, was for one day.
You, yeah, their permit was two. That's right.
And they stayed a couple months. But
Did it get violent besides, you know, that led up to the tear gas or was it just all of a sudden we giving you a timely, you got to get out?
Well, and so, what
I don't
an
know.
Image
I got to learn more about it.
Okay. Yeah. His birthday became a national holiday.
Yay.
In 1983, the House of Representatives passed the bill that led to the creation of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Then President Ronald Reagan, despite some of his misgivings, signed the bill into law. Dr. King's birthday is January 15th, but the holiday falls on the third Monday of the month. The very first Martin Luther King Jr. Day was in 1986.
86?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nice. All right. James Earl Ray died in prison despite doubts that he acted alone. In 1977, James Earl Ray escaped from prison. 77. The guy escaped from prison. What's the deal? He was quickly recaptured, and an additional year was added onto his sentence. For years, there were doubts about whether Ray acted alone in the assassination of Dr. King, and a congressional committee came to the same conclusion. In the late 90s, Ray was visited in prison by Dexter King, one of Martin Luther King Jr.'s sons, who shook the man's hand and stated that he didn't believe that Ray committed the crime.
Wow.
The King family essentially forgave the man, who died in Columbia Nashville Memorial Hospital of liver disease on April 23, 1998, 40 years and 19 days after he supposedly killed the civil rights icon. You know, I have to admit, every time I read like a JFK history about the assassination, I think, okay, he acted alone. Okay, no, he didn't. Okay, he acted alone. No, he didn't. I can be swayed very easily, but I don't understand the need that sometimes random crazy things happen and one person can do something horrible.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a huge conspiracy. I mean, sometimes it is, and I don't know in the case of Ray. I mean, the fact that he escapes from prison and suddenly is able to shoot
twice
seems a little odd, but
I really am thinking this one is raising some red flags because a lot of things had to happen after escaping, right? Yeah. I mean, he had to escape, he had to get a gun, He had to have the foresight to know exactly where
King was going to be and when.
And then to shoot him in the head.
And somehow get to England.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, well, we have our own conspiracy theory going on here now, obviously. And then to escape again. I mean, that's an odd one, too. Yeah. I mean,
in 77.
And he gets 1 year added. Well, remember, wasn't he sentenced to 99?
Oh, one more year. One more year. No.
Okay. So the Lorraine Motel became the National Civil Rights Museum. It's in Memphis, Tennessee. It was where Martin Luther King Jr. was staying when he was shot. The motel only had 16 rooms, including the infamous room 306, his room. The motel ran into financial difficulties in the 80s, closing its doors as a hotel in 1987. Several years later, it reopened as the National Civil Rights Museum, dedicated to King, the active Black community in Memphis, and everyone who fought for equal rights. The museum has since expanded to a multifaceted complex.
This would give me a reason to go to Memphis.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. His family dealt with a number of tragedies. In the years after his death, Martin Luther King Jr.'s family was beset by a number of tragedies. His mother, Alberta, was shot to death during an Atlanta, Georgia church service in 1974. That's horrible. His brother, Alfred Daniel Williams King, drowned in his own swimming pool in 1969, despite being a good swimmer. Alfred Daniel King's daughter, his niece, Dr. King's niece, died of a heart attack while jogging in 1976, and one of his sons died while playing basketball. Coretta, that's horrible. Coretta Scott King, his widow, made it to the age of 78, and she died of ovarian cancer in 2006.
Oh, yeah. Quite a legacy. Here are some of the lesser known MLK quotes.
Yeah, I like these.
I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have three meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits.
That's one of my favorites.
That is a good one.
Yeah. I mean, we all know some of the usual ones.
But, right.
The function of education is to teach one to think intensively and to think critically. Intelligence plus character. That is the goal of true education. Like your social studies teacher.
I know, right? Here's another good one. Of all the forms of inequality, injustice in health is the most shocking and inhumane.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of forget that a lot of his speaking and messages was, there was a lot of fronts to it.
Right.
I mean, there was education, it was financial health, there's a lot of things.
Well, and if that big, the big project he was working on was the 3,000 tents on the National Mall, I mean, that has to do with and focus on being homeless.
Yeah.
All the reason that you become homeless, yes.
And then the last one I wrote down, we must be concerned not merely about who murdered them, but about the system, the way of life, the philosophy which produced the murderers. That's speaking today's language.
Yep. Systemic.
Yeah.
Can I share just a couple of the other good ones?
Yeah.
That you may have heard already. The one of the top ones is love is the greatest force in the universe. And he really preached love. He was a preacher. He's a reverend. So he talked about that a lot. But he was just this great writer, right? An orator that was able to share these messages that were simple and profound. True peace is merely the absence of tension. True peace is not merely the absence of tension. It is the presence of justice.
Wow. There we go.
That's another good one. Yeah.
So Martin Luther King Jr., yep. Day tomorrow, do something positive, make the world a little better, make a goal to be just a little better yourself.
Sounds good.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.